is on any given day, he can talk. One day he says he wants to live, the next day he wants to die. Again, there's no advance directives. The hospital's telling the family that they got to take dad home. He can't stay there. The family's saying, we can't care for him. What do we do?
Well, as you imagine, often this is where bioethics consultants or palliative care physicians, bioethics committees get called in. And in this question, like so many, there's some missing information. So somehow he's able to communicate, but it's not consistent. So again, we would want to get an expert in there. This is a lot of what I do during the day, and find out, is he delirious? Is he confused? And that's what's explaining the changing opinions. Can he really make a decision? And if he can, let's see what he wants for his life. And then it's unclear why the hospital is telling him to take the patient home. Probably a conflict about goals of care, like we talked about in the previous question.
I'm Pamela Wilson, the Care Navigator on Talk Radio 630 KHOW. You're with us on The Caring Generation, focusing on the conversation of caring, giving us permission to talk about aging, the challenges of caregiving, and everything in between. Whether you're a caregiver or a person needing care, facing an unexpected situation, or if you're interested in education to help you live a healthier and more informed life, you're in the right place with us every Sunday from 10 to noon. We're back talking about difficult discussions in care and caregiving. Dr. Nancy Berlinger is a research scholar at the Hastings Center, an independent, nonprofit bioethics research institute in Garrison, New York. Her research and teaching focus on ethics issues in the organization and delivery of health care include cancer care, palliative care, end-of-life care, patient safety, and ethics education for healthcare professionals. She's a commentator on healthcare ethics and public policy for National Public Radio, the New York Times, the Washington Post, and other media. She's a graduate of Smith College and holds a PhD in English literature from the University of Glasgow and a master's in divinity and ethics from Union Theological Seminary. Dr. Berlinger, good morning and welcome.
Thank you very much. I'm delighted to be here.
So talk about what's changed, that we're experiencing more ethical issues related to death today than years ago.
Well, the two biggest reasons are longevity and technology. Americans are living much longer than they did 100 years ago, and people are dying of different things because of the difference in longevity. Reducing certain causes of death, death due to infection, for example, because of the introduction of antibiotics, or death due to workplace injuries. We don't have as many people who die in farming accidents or mining accidents, although people certainly do still die in those ways, mean that Americans are living long enough to develop age-related conditions such as Alzheimer's disease, diseases of major organ systems, and cancer, which typically strike people in their 7th, 8th, 9th generation of life. And, of course, we have more ways to treat these conditions, in some cases to help people maintain their health while they have these conditions. You think of something like a pacemaker, for example. When it's introduced, it may help you maintain your health, but if you start to develop other conditions, decisions about the pacemaker become more prominent in your life. You may be thinking about it differently at 80 than you did at 60, for example. So we keep coming back to, when we talk about ethical issues, we keep coming back to questions about what do I want? What would a patient who is no longer able to make decisions want? And for physicians and for other healthcare professionals, there are additional challenges. How do I present these issues to patients and their loved ones to support informed decision-making? So that's a short answer to a very important question.
Well, and to that point about presenting information about decision-making, is there more pressure on people to accept medical treatment than to just decline, do you think?
It's difficult to say, because if you ask a physician, he or she might say, it's the patients and the families who are always asking about new treatments. Everybody is Googling the latest drug. And it's true. You know, people read what's in the newspaper, they read what's online, they check things out, that may be part of being an informed consumer, you know, so that's been a change in the culture. But if you ask patients and their loved ones, they may still say they wish they had more information about the consequences of medical decisions, not just the fact that there's a drug, there's a technology, but what will happen if we start this, if we try this? So often it comes down to the quality of communication between patients and physicians or among patients, physicians, and loved ones. And this takes time and it takes practice. And often the physician is in the best place to establish the fact that there needs to be collaboration around these issues, a forum for discussing treatment decisions as they come up. So it isn't crisis-driven decision-making, although there are situations where you have to make decisions very quickly in a critical care setting, for example. But even then, there can be attention to the need to have an opportunity to ask questions, to take in information, to do time-limited trials, to say, well, let's try this out for a period of time, and here's what we're looking for in terms of the benefits and the burdens of the treatment. So you can make a decision based on a little bit more experience about what it's like to be on this drug or to use this technology.
Well, let's use your example of a pacemaker and then maybe somebody who's on dialysis. Let's say that the pacemaker is starting to fail, somebody's having more heart issues, the person on dialysis is kind of just getting tired of it. What are quality of life issues that should be discussed that might make somebody not to get that pacemaker replaced or fixed or might not even continue dialysis?
Those are very, very good questions. When you think about a pacemaker, for example, or another implantable device, the batteries on those could last 10 years. And a patient's health could change, a person's health could change greatly from 70 to 80 or 80 to 90. And so we don't want to sort of defer things to say, well, I don't have to think about anything to do with my health while that battery is still working, or the fact that I'm on dialysis to replace the function of my kidneys means that nothing else will happen. This is what I do. No, we know if you have experience with parents, my parents are in their 70s. My grandmother just died at 102.
Wow.
And so we are constantly thinking about these issues and talking about these issues. So it's amazingly important to keep, and it sounds so basic, to keep talking about this. An individual who is experiencing different health-related problems, or maybe it's just one, maybe it's cancer or maybe it's heart disease, should talk with his or her loved ones, including anyone who that patient sees as the decision maker, the person, whether it's a spouse, an adult child, whomever, the person who they want to make decisions on their behalf, but also other loved ones may be involved in this discussion. Talk about what the patient is feeling right now, what the patient wants at this stage in the patient's life, and if the patient has any feelings about, well, you know, I like this now, but if X happens, if my health deteriorates beyond a certain point, or if I can't do something particular that is really meaningful to me, that would change. That would change how I would think about how I'm using this treatment or technology. People are individuals, so we can't deduce this from what somebody else, what Uncle Harry wanted. Aunt Harriet might want something entirely different because she's a different person. And so that's why just talking about this is hugely important and also challenging because people may find it difficult to talk about these things. A patient may have started treatment months or years earlier, and maybe at the time a treatment was more effective than it is now. The burdens of the treatment are exceeding its benefits for this patient. But one thing, and this is maybe something that is particularly American that comes up, is that the patient's loved ones or friends or physician are still talking about the battling disease, mm-hmm. or saying, well, don't give up, or you're a fighter, or something like that. Dr. Atul Gawande wrote a wonderful essay about this for The New Yorker last summer. It's called Letting Go. And he writes about how difficult it is, even for physicians like himself, to acknowledge that a patient's condition is changing or that what the patient wants, the patient's preferences, are changing. It's easier to keep doing the same thing. So it's if your readers haven't read that, it's available online, and it's just a wonderful essay.
And what's the doctor's last name again?
His last name is Gawande, Gawande.
Perfect.
It was in the New Yorker last August. It's been a very influential piece among clinicians and also among patients and families. It was published in a magazine, so it got a very wide readership.
Perfect. We just have time for one more question. Can you just talk about why end-of-life care has become so expensive?
Sure. It goes back to the original question about longevity and technology. In the United States in particular, we tend to have high expectations concerning technology, that it will be there when we want it, when we need it. Hospitals are reimbursed by procedures, not for taking care of dying people, for example. So there's also an economic incentive to do procedures, to use technology. As healthcare reform rolls out and as we continue to grapple with the cost of healthcare as the baby boom generation starts using Medicare in large numbers, we're going to have to grapple with the cost of care near the end of life because the current situation is unsustainable. And this requires us to think about the care of dying people as part of healthcare, not as separate from it and not as a failure of healthcare. So that's going to be a continuing conversation for us in this country. There are a couple of resources. I know that your program is geared toward caregivers, and I wonder if there some interest in a website and another book I can recommend.
Absolutely. Give it to me, and then I can post links on our website.
Great. There's a website called getpalliativecare.org. It comes out of the wonderful Center for Advancing Palliative Care that Diane Meyer has at Mount Sinai here in New York. But this website, getpalliativecare.org, is designed for patients and caregivers. Very, very useful. There's a book called Handbook for Mortals, and it's by Dr. Joanne Lynn and Dr. Joan Harrell, and it's guidance for people facing serious illness. It is written in plain language. It's tremendously useful. I have it on my desk. It's in paperback. So those are two resources that I found to be very useful for non-professionals who are facing difficult decisions.
Wonderful. Dr. Berlinger, I thank you so much for your time today.
Thank you very much.
You're welcome. Bye-bye. I'm Pamela Wilson, the Care Navigator. You're with me on Talk Radio 630 KHOW and The Caring Generation. Up next, our Caring Controversy of the Week. Many of you will be visiting parents this weekend and might notice that things are not going very well. Your loved one needing care doesn't want to discuss the situation. What's really going on, and is there anything you can do? I'll share both sides next.